were curious about the difference in attitude, whether there's a difference in attitude here between reform, conservative, and orthodox forms of burial and funeral.
Yes. I think I would like, however, to redirect the question, if I may, with your permission, to the original, and get into this in a moment, to the original question that you have when you were out of the room, as to how do my beliefs and my thoughts of religious performance in the funeral differ from those of the Orthodox. And my answer to that was this. I'm a Jewish funeral director. I serve the needs of the entire community. If a Orthodox family comes to me, I don't try to legislate my reform beliefs or conservative beliefs on that family. I perform my functions as they want them to be performed. Obviously, my training is, as far as the funeral industry is concerned, the funeral profession, is to be able to sense the requirements from a funeral standpoint of the religious beliefs of all people, Jews, that is. And I'm very well acquainted with the requirements of the Orthodox, conservative, and or reform. And the Reconstruction. So if an Orthodox family or conservative or Reform family were to come to me, or an agnostic family for that matter, as long as they're Jewish, born Jewish and so forth, were to come to me, obviously my performance as a funeral director is according to their wishes, their desires, their needs, their observances, and their beliefs. There is absolutely no intent on my part to force, prohibit, introduce, legislate, or require anything that I personally believe in upon the families I serve. That's separate and individual. I might like golf, and I'm certainly not going to impose golf on someone who loves tennis, which is a poor example, nonetheless. As to the difference in the procedures of Orthodox Reform and Reform Jews, it's a very difficult thing to answer, other than to say, of course, there is one thing that is Jewish law, period. There is no such thing as Reform Jewish law, Orthodox Jewish law, Conservative Jewish law, etc. There is only Jewish law. However, the interpretation of that law by the various sects is a responsive. And the principles by which various people live are either drawn from an interpretation of that Jewish law or strict adherence to the Jewish law. Now, we hear many times here with a family who come in that they're Orthodox. And then we, of course, suggest that this be done according to that, this be done according to the law. And we always get to inform, well, we're not that Orthodox. And my answer to them is always, well, you just can't be a little pregnant. Either have to be or not, one or the other. And if you want us to perform our functions according to Jewish law as Orthodox, this is the way it has to be done. If they say, no, we want everything done except this, this, or this, we do it according to everything except this, this, and this. So the community is really a very heterogeneous community, that Jewish community, that is. We find that that there's a segment of Reform Jews who now are more traditional. We find a segment of the conservative that are more liberal. We find that even there are a segment of the Orthodox that are certainly a little bit more liberalized, I won't say liberal, in a lot of things that the difference between the Lubavitchers, obviously, yeah, the Hasidim, the Russian, Hungarian, Litvak, Lithuanians, and so forth. There's always these little things that create the difference of how they approach their religious beliefs among the Orthodox. And this is something you have to sense in my experience. It's not something that you can open a book and read and get the full meaning. So just an experience of learning this.
How do you view a difficult question. I'm going to read it to you, and then we'll try and diagnose it. How do you view your accomplishments and successes? In other words, what do you think is important about your work, what you've achieved so far in this community? What have you found difficult?
Well, my entire belief of the funeral profession is to serve others, to alleviate problems, to help in stressful conditions, to provide a service that was certainly something of great dignity, that they could look back with thoughts of comfort and not find psychological hang-ups that were distressing. I very deeply believe in the fact that any segment of Judaism, I don't care what it is, down to the very basic construction of Orthodox Judaism, can be approached with a certain dignity. It doesn't have to be the wailing and the header-skedder, helter-skelter approach. It can be done with dignity. And I think that I, from the very day that I started, I insisted that being done here, people in various ways that weren't dictatorial, certainly, but were more suggestive. And I think I've accomplished that relatively well. One of the things that is distressing and stressful to me, talked about that earlier, the Marcus Welby School of Medicine,
mm-hmm.
Where people come in here, well-intentioned, well-meaning, and they sit here in a stressful condition with a friend and so forth, and they would get into a discussion of various approaches. The friend will say, you don't want to do that, it'll be much easier for you with this way and that way. And these are people who are not graduates of the schools of social work, who are not graduates by virtue of experience of the profession, who really are well-intentioned but don't know what they're talking about. And they can do more damage and more harm to a person than someone who knows what they're doing. But yet, at the same time, it's stressful to me that I can't be forceful enough to overcome that situation sometimes. You have to kind of lay back. So that's the thing that's distressing to me.
In retrospect, would you choose to be in this profession if you had to choose again, or would you do something else?
Two aspects. We've come down to a posture today, and I think everyone is facing this, of horrible government intervention. And from that aspect of that aspect alone, no, I don't think I would do it over again. From the standpoint of doing the work that I do and liking what I do, absolutely I'd do it over again. Absolutely. But government intervention is getting so horrifying and so depressing that people don't realize we have three employees here that I had to hire to do nothing but attend to government requirements of OSHA, ADA, Federal Trade Commission. You just can't let your guard down for 1 minute. You just can't let it down, because government intervention into this or any business for that matter has created record keeping to the point that it's unbelievable, and these things are costly. They've increased costs. It's just not a question that I decided I need a new limousine or new this that's increased the cost. It's all these factors. So
what events occur at work that make you feel particularly good? I think we touched on this last
what
time.
What
events in your work, uh-huh. in the course of your work, make you feel really good about it? You had talked about counseling previously.
Yeah, I think that let me just give you an example, if I may, for a moment. I happened to play golf on Saturday, and I admit this very openly. That's one day I enjoy playing golf. Play golf on Saturday with a gentleman that I'm very friendly with and played before, and we had sat down to have something to eat afterwards, and I don't know how the subject came around to, oh yes, we had buried someone here on Friday that he knew very well and so forth, and I didn't realize I'd buried his mother. And gentleman said to me, he said, I have to tell you, Bert, he said, you were such a gentleman. You handled things so well, and made it so easy, and felt so comforting, that it was less stressful to us. When I hear that, immediately after the funeral, or the day or two or three later, and we do what we call, I belong to an association, National Selected Morticians, which I think I indicated, which is really the prestige organization of the funeral industry, and they send out a follow-up. That's one of the provisions of membership. They send out a follow-up. They want to know how I comport myself. They want to know, are my prices too high? They want to know, am I treating my public correctly and so forth? And if they find a continuity of incidents in that area, it's a red flag situation, they contact you immediately. This is something that I'm just speaking about here. Now, this is what we call family feedback from the bulletin. And I put this downstairs here. This one makes me feel good. Burtonhurst, these are all different funeral homes across the country. Burtonhurst Funeral Home, appropriate Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Thank you for helping us bury our father with dignity. We were pleased with your attention to detail and the efficiency which you carry off the services and burial. That's making me feel good. Then I know I've done what I should do, and I've helped someone.
Yes.
I always used to say when I first started the business, I'm trying to build a business, not a bank account. And I still feel that same way. The money will come as a matter of normalcy if you treat people properly and correctly.
And what has given you the most satisfaction in your life?
Well, a lot of things, but obviously, great parents. I'm very fortunate to marry the lady I did. Two children that I enjoyed very much. Unfortunately, sorry if I ever lose one. Attaining what I want to attain professionally. I'm very pleased that I've been able to do what I've done, not from the standpoint of financial gain, but being able to establish myself as an ethical operator. Great comfort when they come in here, that they don't have to worry about a boxing glove confrontation constantly. Is he going to take advantage of me? Is he not going to do this? And when I tell him I'm going to do a certain thing, not worry about, am I going to be ripped off? Is it doing it the right way? We do things right, so to speak.
To go back a little bit to the city in your recollections, could you tell us a little bit about the contrast in the environment in the old days and today?
Oh, yes, I sure can. My father, as I indicated, had a radio business downtown Pittsburgh, and when you would go to work in the morning, there was such thing as white shirts in Pittsburgh. You wore blue shirts or gray shirts and so forth, because if you wore a white shirt by the time you got to work, it was black. Environment was, we didn't see sun in the city at this point very often. The mills just poured out, of course it was black gold, no question about it, poured out horrible amounts. If you weren't here, you can't believe it, that this city had the over-sealing past of the pollution and the smoke. So it's just unbelievable. I think that as a result of the mills, most everyone that grew up in the city of Pittsburgh up until 10, 15 years ago, had a sinus problem as a result of sulfuric acid from steel making. We were horribly polluted in the city, just horribly polluted.
Yes, even when we came in 62, I recall, compared to today, it was quite polluted. I mean, it wasn't its worst by any means, but just beginning to clean up. Thank you. Well, I had a question I thought of. Could you give us a rough idea of how many burials on an average you perform, either on a monthly or an annual basis?
Well, monthly is a pretty difficult thing to say, because our business is you're great variable. So that, I choose rather to give a general overview of figures on a yearly basis rather than a monthly basis. Our business is very peculiar. We're feast or famine. Right now we're in a famine period. Death rate is extremely low right now. Can't tell you why, it's just very low, period. You run those cycles. Last week we had three funerals. Sunday we had, Friday we had two funerals. Sunday we had none, which is very unusual. Today we had one service, and just been running that way, but normally we do in an average of around between 240 and 275 funerals a year. I used to be entranced as a young man with the fact that I wanted to be able to do 200, 300, 400, 500 funerals. Those numbers were very critical to me. I thought that was the measure of success. Not so. I'm not I'm concerned about how many funerals I do a month, year, week, or day. I'm concerned about the type of family I serve. I'm concerned about the type of service that they select. I'm concerned about the service my people give. Those are things that concern me more than my figures. I could do our funeral home here. My competitor, without using any names, I'm probably generous in that respect, is a very fine gentleman, and we have a very good relationship, which I didn't always have in the city of Pittsburgh with Ralph Schroeder. But the Rives are a nice family. They're a very generous family, a very sweet family, and we get along very well. And unfortunately, David lost his, not his biological father, but his legal father, Arnold Rive, who was a gentleman in every respect also. David is learning and getting experience, but he's very inexperienced. And I don't mean that from a negative standpoint, but in a very sincere manner. And I'm fortunate, anyhow, and I think the city's fortunate, that when he runs into a snag and he doesn't know what to do, the first call is made is here. He calls here at least 3 days a week. And I feel very, very satisfied that he does call here and that I'm able to direct him as I think properly, not from my standpoint of benefiting me, but from the standpoint of benefiting him and the community as well. So we have a good relationship there. But they came from a background of a funeral home that did fundamentally the Orthodox type of business in the city of Pittsburgh. Yes. Oh, yes, Blank Brothers. The Rives were Blank Brothers. And this is not looking at it from an attitude of what you want to call it, I won't even use the word that I was thinking of. But just from that standpoint, from the economic strata that they came from, I find that they have to do at least 2.5 to 3 funerals to equal my one funeral here. Not because we're more expensive. I think I'm pretty good at my business. I know what I do and how I do it. And were I to go over here and pull out a form, I can show you that we're less expensive in reality. We have today what's called the Federal Trade Commission, and that every funeral home today must present every family a general price list. There's our price list. Now, it's no problem for me to go down to Senator Abdu and say, I'd like to have your price list, even though I do it. I'm a competitor. They must give me a price list if I ask for it. If you say to me, can I have this? I must give this to you by law. So I have this price list. And if we go down the price list, comparing one apples with apples, as they say, you'll find that we're a little less expensive here. But the people that we serve are in an economic category that they do select better funerals. That doesn't make me more expensive, but I don't go by numbers. I choose not to say we had so many funerals last month. That means nothing to me. I choose to say that we had X number of funerals and the families were all satisfied, rather than we had 50 funerals and we had 10 families that were dissatisfied. So the numbers are not important to me.
Do you feel that people are living longer nowadays?
Oh, for sure.
I mean, I'm finding on television in the morning they'll have at least 2 people over 100 a day.
Yes, now. They are living longer, we find, but I what I sense, what I hear, and what I see, quality of life is not any better. Quality of life certainly doesn't seem to be as good. We're burying a lot of older people today, but these people are institutionalized, and their Alzheimer's or their Parkinson's or whatever you want to call it, their quality of life is not as good as it was when they were younger, of course. But yes, we're burying a lot of older people. Yes, 80 and 90. We had a week here when Dr. Solomon B. Freehoff died. We didn't bury a single soul that was less than 98 years old. And those were about 7 or 8 funerals. So that was less than 98.
What other information would you care to cover or add? Would you like to tell us anything about honors or awards that you have?
Well, honors and awards are important from a business standpoint, I think. as an indication to the public that you are providing a community service as well. The most prestigious award, as far as I'm concerned, is this award right here. Unsolicited. That, to me, is the most prestigious award that I could possibly get. All the other...
Would you explain that award?
Yes. This was a family feedback. Thank you for helping us bury our father with dignity. That, to me, is the most prestigious award that I could get. And all the other things you see here are awards that... honors that I've received in my profession and community life. And so, while they're important, they're important to one's ego, there's no question about it, but they only do prove one thing, that you are competent in what you do, you have the ability of doing something that you're asked to do, and see it through, and do it right. But again, awards, most prestigious, is this award right here. That to me is the most important thing.
As a parent, I'd like to ask you how your parents felt when you chose this career.
Well, my mother was taken back a little bit. She was not in opposition to it. She was just taken back a little bit. My mother always believed that I should be a song and dance man. she didn't try to nurture that at all, but I guess she was handed by her own way. But she was very supportive of my decision. My father thought it was the greatest thing in the world. And when I went into business, my father had retired. My father was not anti-union, but in his business, he had a great relationship with the employees. And they were all on first-name basis. And they wanted to take a day off to go fishing with his son, take a day off to go fishing with his son. If you had to take your wife shopping, go for shopping with your wife. But when someone came into the rabble-rouser and tried to organize the plant, and he just called them all together, it was a very dangerous thing because it was illegal. National Labor Relations Board, he told him, if you want to organize, please go right ahead. But keep in mind one thing, 9 o'clock doesn't mean 1 minute after 9, 5 o'clock doesn't mean 1 minute before 5, and Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday means you work, you can take on fishing, you don't go here, you don't go there, and so forth. And the first one that does, according to the contract, is fired. And not too many months after they decided to not pressure to organize, one of the men came to him and told him, this is interesting, he wanted to take a day off to take his son to do something. I don't know what it was. My father said, I'm sorry, your contract calls for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And he said, well, I'm not going to be here. I'm going to take off. He said, well, I'm sorry, if you do, you'll be fired. And the man took off and he fired him, which immediately stimulated a strike. Father walked out the front of his plant and said, one more day of strike, and I close and lock the plant. Not sell it, close and lock it. And one more day of strike they did. And my father closed the plant, locked it up, and retired.
When was that?
It was in 19... I think it was right... I'm trying to recall exactly. It was just before the war. Just in the 1943. And when I came back from service and decided to go in business, he was here to help me directly from a business standpoint, and just loved the business himself. Nothing I could think of. I had a lot of great support from people. My grandmother was the only one of 7 children to be married. They gave me Youngstown, Ohio. And my father was always the apple of their eye. He was the aunts. And of course, when I was born, he fell from place and I took over his position. There. She was a painter. That's a self-portrait. She taught me how to paint and copy many things. And we were all very proficient in our own way, the arts and so forth.
Were you an only child?
Yes. Yes. Yes, my mother had a very severe goiter condition, and after I was born, she was told by her physician, Dr. Carroll, the name is starting to come back to me now, that were she to have another child, it would be very severe life threat. So my parents decided not to have another child. To my sorrow.
Yes, I understand that. I'm an only child.
Well, thank you so much.
It's really been fascinating.
Maybe we should tape this. That might be interesting. Right. We're talking about the government regulations.
Yeah, my niece was married in Los Angeles in early April. And I, of course, being my only niece, went to the wedding. Before I came back, there was a seminar given by the National Film Director Association, which was required by every licensee to take on what they call blood-borne pathogens. And you had to take that course, and you had to be examined after that course, and in an oral written examination, certifying the fact that you took the course, not so much that you passed it, but certifying at least that you took it. And if you didn't take the course, couldn't walk in that operating room. So I wasn't here and I couldn't take the course. I'm not allowed to walk in that operating room. Now, I'm allowed to go in right now. There's no one there. But when it's a body there, I can't dare walk in, because if you have a disgruntled employee, fortunately, we don't have any disgruntled employees here, but if you knew, if there could be one and report me, I would be in serious trouble. So I make a practice not going in right now until they are recruiting the course. Give you another aspect. OSHA requires what they call MSDS sheets. This is Material Safety Data Standard sheets. And anything that you have in your funeral home of any chemical nature at all, you must have an MSDS sheet. We must have a book upstairs that's three times thick, but that thick. Even to the point of I have a bottle of men's...